In today's congressional hearings on the National Security Agency's controversial data collecting programs, several officials who testified mentioned the FISA court, the special intelligence court which oversees government requests for warrants. At issue is the FISA court's interpretation of what information the government can collect and how. We are joined now by Elizabeth Goitein, co-director of the Brennan Center for Justice's Liberty and National Security Program. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you very much.
The debate over NSA surveillance began when Glenn Greenwald of The Guardian published a FISA court order which required Verizon to give the government telephone information on an ongoing daily basis. Was that our first look at a FISA order?
It really was. It was the first time that we had seen an order of that kind that was disclosed. In the past, FISA court orders and FISA court opinions have been classified at the top secret level and have been available only to specified committees of Congress. So it was a very rare public view. I think there have been three FISA court opinions over the course of the decades since the FISA court has been in place that have actually been made public, you know, voluntarily by the government.
Well, in an interview with Charlie Rose on PBS last night, the president said that the FISA court system was transparent.
I know, I saw that.
What do you think he meant by that?
Maybe he meant that it was transparent that there is a FISA court, and it's transparent how the judges are appointed, and it's transparent who the judges are, and it's transparent how the court works. But, of course, it's a very different, all of those are very different matters from having what the court is actually ruling in terms of how it interprets the statute. Having that be transparent is where obviously that doesn't happen.
And the statute is Section 215 of the Patriot Act. Can you explain what it says and how many critics argue that it's been interpreted in an overly broad way?
Sure. So, I mean, I was talking about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and in fact, Section 215 of the Patriot Act amended FISA, so that's part of that overall statutory framework. And what Section 215 said was that the government could apply to the FISA court for an order to get any tangible thing as long as it demonstrated or as long as it certified that that thing was relevant to an authorized foreign intelligence or international terrorism investigation. And of course, the outcry came from the fact that there's simply no way that 300 million Americans' telephone records could be relevant to an authorized foreign intelligence investigation. So there seemed to be a real mismatch between the program and the language of Section 215.
Is there any court of appeal for FISA rulings?
There is a.
Is there an adversarial process?
Yes and no in that order. So there is a court of appeals. But because there generally is not an adversarial process, the only party that would make use of that court of appeals is the government. If the government applies for an order and doesn't get the order, it can appeal to the review court.
And when was the last time that happened?
The last time that happened, I believe, the court of appeals cases that have been made public are cases in which the government essentially won its appeal, and there are only a couple of those. So, you know, the government has only been denied by the FISA court 11 times since 1978. So it would only have had 11 times in which it wanted to appeal, presumably.
Out of how many requests? Out of how many requests?
Out of more than 30,000. 11 out of 30,000 requests. Anyway, getting back to the question about the adversarial process, the telephone companies or the other companies or third parties who receive these orders have a right to challenge the orders before the FISA court. So in theory, there's an opportunity for another party to show up. In practice, those are not the parties whose rights are really affected by the order. The people whose communications or whose records are being gathered do not have a right to appear. And so in the vast majority of cases, it is only the government that appears before the court.
Deputy Attorney General Jim Cole testified today before the House Select Committee on Intelligence, and he said that the FISA order, which was published by The Guardian, was one of two, and he spelled out what that second unpublished order says. So let's take a listen.
That's one of two orders. It's the smallest of the two orders. And the other order, which has not been published, goes into in great detail what we can do with that metadata, how we can access it, how we can look through it, what we can do with it once we have looked through it, and what the conditions are that are placed on us to make sure that we protect privacy and civil liberties and at the same time protect public safety.
Has the government given an indication as to what those protections Mr. Coles spoke about are?
My understanding is that there has been additional testimony this morning. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch it, going into some detail about those protections. The other information that we know is from a fact sheet put out by the Director of National Intelligence, in which he said that the government can only query the database of Americans' telephone records if it has reason to suspect that the basis for the query, whatever that means, is associated with a foreign terrorist organization. So that's what we know. But it sounds like, you know, the government's compliance with that additional safeguard is pretty much self-policed in the sense that the government already has the records, and then it's supposed to not look at the records unless certain standards are met. Well, once they have the records, we sort of have to rely on their self-restraint in terms of conforming to those additional requirements.
Well, when you talked about the basis, you said whatever that means. Sounds rather hazy from an attorney.
Well, it's not clear. I mean, what they don't say is we only query the records if the person whose phone number we are using to query the records is in fact believed to be tied to a terrorist organization. Instead, they say the basis for the query. Well, to me, that's kind of wiggle language, and I'd like to know exactly what it means. Going back to those two orders, the first order, which has not been disclosed, it's called the primary order. The primary order is the order that's given to the government, which says these are your responsibilities. The secondary order is the one given to the telephone companies, which basically just says turn it over. To the extent this primary order should reassure us because it has all these protections in place, I think the government should make it public. We already know that the program is happening. We've already seen the secondary order. If the primary order contains the protections for Americans, then surely we should see those as well.
The government argues that that would hurt national security.
Well, the government also said that the secondary order would hurt national security. And then as soon as it came out, the president said that he welcomed the debate and that the public needed to make these decisions about the trade-offs between security and privacy. And that part of what he said is the part that I agree with.
So we're getting certain contradictory messages from the government. The deputy attorney general also discussed what kinds of information the government is collecting. Let's take a listen.
It's metadata. These are phone records. This is just like what you would get in your own phone bill. It is the number that was dialed from, the number that was dialed to, the date, and the length of time. That's all we get under 215. We do not get the identity of any of the parties to this phone call. We don't get any cell site or location information as to where any of these phones were located. And most importantly, and you're probably going to hear this about 100 times today, we don't get any content.
Is that why the government argues that this collection is not protected by the Fourth Amendment?
That's right. And in fact, the Supreme Court has in fact held that that kind of information is not protected by the Fourth Amendment. I think the issue with the telephone records collection program is more an issue about whether or not the government was acting consistently with the statute than it is whether the government was acting consistently with the Fourth Amendment. But I must say that it is somewhat disingenuous for the government to sort of dismiss this information as mere telephone numbers when at the same time, the government is saying this is absolutely critical information that reveals so much that it is absolutely necessary to disrupt terrorist plots. This information, as the government knows, can be manipulated by sophisticated computer programs in a way that tells the government a tremendous amount about people's associations and their activities. That's why the government wants this information. So it's not just phone numbers.
How are members of the FISA court selected? Do we know?
Yes, they're appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. All of the current sitting members of the FISA court were selected by Chief Justice Roberts. They serve 7-year terms, which are staggered. And, you know, it's It's worth noting that of the 11 judges sitting on the court right now, all except one of them were appointed either by President Reagan, President George W. Bush, or President George H.W. Bush.
So President Obama has not appointed any of these, and neither did Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton appointed one of the 11, and the others were all appointed by Reagan, Bush, or Bush.
Elizabeth Goitein is co-director of the Brennan Center for Justice's Liberty and National Security Program. Thank you so much for scaring the heck out of me.
Anytime.